Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We apologize for our late start. We'd like to invite Bill Wyatt from the governor's office to come forward. And what we're going to do is we're just going to go into public session on House Bill 5025 relative to the governor's budget and make sure that we're all starting from the same place. We've had a couple of hearings on the governor's staff and budget previously. And if you need any comments or input from Chief of Staff, Bill Wyatt, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the record. My name is Bill Wyatt. I am Chief of Staff to the Governor. And I think the only thing I wanted to do today was to be sure that the record was correct on my previous testimony about the strategic reserve. There was a question, I think, in committee these many months ago about resources that were available to the governor outside of the governor's office budget. And I had mentioned the strategic reserve fund and surmised at the time that that was at approximately $1.5 million dollars. And it turns out that the portion that was not already set aside in the strategic reserve for other specific projects is actually $3.7 million in the 97-99 allocation. And I actually, if you would prefer, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to leave a list with you of the all of the projects I hold up here which accounted for those expenditures. And they tend to be grants in the range of $25,000 to $100,000. There are a couple. We've spent, I think, $500,000 on the Nucor project in Coos Bay, and there are a couple of that size. But for the most part, they are smaller grants to small, typically manufacturing companies locating in rural parts of the state.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We are a subcommittee of the subcommittee, and we will move into work session when we can. Mr. Wyatt, are there any questions of Mr. Wyatt relative to the issues that he's brought up today?
Sure, maybe a committee for you, and I'm sure Mr. Wyatt will be concerned. So so with regard to the budget note that we see here, subject governor's budget report, and it's some language that's been drafted. It says the subcommittee discussed the governor's ability to marshal direct resources to deal with emergencies and other priorities. Open communication between the governor's office and the assembly can allay concerns that resources are diverted from legislatively approved purposes for other uses. The subcommittee encouraged the governor's office to communicate with the assembly when resources are diverted to meet emergencies and other priorities. My question is, do we all understand what's being asked here? And if and when the governor's office needs to divert resources for something else, and I presume it does sometimes need to do that, with whom do they communicate? When we talk about the legislature, are we talking about legislative fiscal? They communicate with legislative fiscal when they do that. What do we mean by this note, Mr. Chair, so nobody gets confused later on when this.
Thank you very much, Senator Trow. This is language which was worked out with legislative fiscal and Mr. Wyatt on behalf of the governor's office to attempt to make sure that there is some notification. And the notification level, I think, probably is at the level of the governor to the members of the legislature who are available to receive that. I assume that in part of the emergency board, legislative fiscal offices, and the Department of Administrative Service is always a portion of that. Now, as to the mechanics and the protocol, those kinds of things, I don't think that is, and it does not bear the this doesn't raise the level of the budget notice as much as it is budget narrative.
Okay, this isn't any part of the budget report or the narrative, and it's a description of what should happen. In no way is the governor giving notification interpreted to mean that they must seek approval.
That's exactly correct.
Okay.
So perhaps Mr. Wyatt, the Chief of Staff, could give us his feeling as to what communication and to whom We didn't feel that it was necessary because there isn't a level of request and approval.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think the Senator raises a good point. I think the reason this is not a budget note is because of the earlier concerns that have been raised about the constitutionality of such a budget note. The separation of powers is pretty clear, we think, in this regard. And we take the position that whenever we marshal forces or resources outside of our office, it is done so within the context of approved budgets and current law. We've had questions raised in the past, primarily by Senator Farioli and I think others as well, who are anxious to know when that occurs in some substantial way. And typically, this has been in the area of natural resources, and I think that's where the greatest concerns have been raised. And we have certainly nothing to hide, and we'll be happy to communicate periodically with the leadership during our regular leadership meetings, which occur in the interim as well as they do during the session, to let them know what we're up to. And the level of detail will have to be determined by, I suppose, the questions that might arise from those communications.
There's a good understanding of what this means and how you communicate. So
yep.
There won't be
much.
Okay, good.
So those will be communicated to the leadership in the interim meetings with the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions of Mr. White? President Krupp?
To play golf.
Yeah, we got the uniform right here. I'm ready. That 4th of July was a nice mid-session break, and now we can
mid-session. I hear. Okay. Well. All
right. What I'd like to thank you very much, Mr. White. What I'd like to do is go ahead and have Dallas Wyand, representing the Legislative Fiscal Office, just quickly go through now the modifications to the general and other funds and total funds with the FTE modifications as has been proffered to obtain a 4% efficiency in the overall governor's budget.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We have before you a copy of the worksheet that we developed to bring you up to show you how the governor's office and budget and management came from the legislatively adopted budget up to the existing, the current service level request, or what would constitute the current service level for the 1999-01 biennium. Without going into detail of that, it's the standard procedures that they followed in the budget instructions to come up to the current service level of $5.52 million general fund and $1.2 million other funds for a total request of a little over $6.7 million and 31 positions, 31 FTE. In the governor's package and request, there were three packages called policy option packages, if you will, to address certain issues in the governor's office. The first one is contained in there is referred to as package 103, and that's to reclassify certain positions within the governor's office, upgrade them to more properly reflect the additional skills and responsibilities of the positions. And in one of the positions, there's also a factor for a bilingual position. Some incentive pay for a bilingual position is felt is needed in the governor's office. And that is $27,000 of general fund and $19,000 of other funds. The second request is package 104 to upgrade the telephone system. This would all be all general fund, $25,000, and itself is needed to somewhat antiquated. And again, that's all general fund. The third package, and this is reflected also in the Department of Administrative Services budget, is to transfer two positions to FTE and about $455,000 of other funds from the station out of the governor's office into the Department of Administrative Services. And this is felt to be consistent to place all of this telecommunications policy. I believe it's in the Information Resources Management Division of the Department of Administrative Services, and those FTE and that is printed communication was picked up in the Department of Administrative Services budget. So that brings us to the governor's recommended budget, which was submitted in the binder to us, about $5.57 million general fund, and actually a little less than 800,000 of other funds limitation because of the reduction in the transfer of funds.
And we have a quorum at this time. Why don't we go ahead and move to work session so that we can we'll go out of the public session, the public hearing on Senate Bill or House Bill 5025, and we will gather then work session. You've heard the recommendation of the options policy packages 103, 4, and 5. Are there any objections to their modification service level, current service level? Seeing none, we will go ahead then with the governor's recommended budget with those three policy packages to the current service level. Okay. Continue on, please, Mr. Lyon.
On the second page, if you will, in the governor's rebalance or adjusted budget request, he had offered up the 4% efficiency savings in the amount of some $221,000. In the second page there, you see where it's broken out. We worked with budget management and the governor's office to identify where the expenditures would be, the reduction in expenditures would be. The total amount, again, is $221,000. The expected savings on the unemployment compensation expense. The spell says that the governor's going to be in office for the next 2 years during the biennium. There would be very little turnover. Expendable property, they've agreed to reduce their expenditures. These are small property purchases. Telecommunications, we looked at the expenditures for the biennium. It felt they could save some money there. Attorney General's costs, also a sizable reduction there. A fairly sizable amount. And they feel they could save money there by not using the Attorney General's office. Some data processing savings, cost savings, and just general office expenses. This was based on a review of the various expenditure categories. Again, no reduction in personnel other than the 2 FTE that were transferred to the Department of Administrative Services. This does achieve what the legislature wanted in the efficiencies of the 4%, and it brings the governor's revised budget request down to 5,351,535 general fund, 779,803 other funds expenditure limitation, 29 positions, and 29 FTE, the offices are fully staffed at this time. And that is the recommendation of the legislative fiscal office.
Senator Trill is recognized. Mr. Chair, I just was wondering if the governor's office, whoever here is representing them, Mr. White, I think you've left, if these efficiency so-called efficiency reductions are ones you've agreed to and you find them acceptable.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trump, for the record, I'm Teresa McKee from the Department of Administrative Services, and yes, they are. We did go through this and look at expenditure patterns, and these are acceptable.
Okay, any further questions? Representative Trump is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Teresa, it appears here that in the 93 budget that the governor's budget was reduced and they eliminated 6.5 positions. In the 95 they added back 2, 97 they added back 2 more. In 95 they started borrowing positions from other agencies and they are continuing to borrow positions, and if so, how many?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, there are, rather than borrow, there are some job rotation positions that the governor's office uses each biennium where they open up rotation opportunities for agencies that rotate people in. Those tend to be in places like the Citizens Representative Office so that people can get some exposure to that, or in answering citizen calls, those kinds of things. There are still, and I don't have the number off the top of my head, but there are still a few positions that are paid for by another agency because the scope of their work deals with that agency. For example, the policy advisor on human resource issues, the Department of Human Resources pays most, if not all, of that position. That is not necessarily new. I think if you would go back to pre-1993, that has always been something I shouldn't say always, because I don't know how far back it dates, but it does date back that there are some positions that are felt that they are 100% spending their time on a specific issue and should be funded by that agency. So I'd be happy to get that.
Would you please? I'm curious to know.
Mm-hmm. Also, so what you're saying is these positions are, borrowing is the word that's used here in our synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually under the control of another direction of the governor's office, but they're being paid for by another agency. Why aren't they just employed by the governor's office?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I think in some cases there are positions that are funded by grants, so they're necessary to have it come through another agency. In other cases, I think it's based on just historical trends. So I can't say it wouldn't make sense to make a change. I think some of it is just dealing with the fact, and again, this administration now has a second term, but therefore, while we're having 4 years in office, and so governor's offices didn't feel like they wanted to make a fundamental change in that structure and let the next governor look at it.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Further questions of Mr. Q? We've received the recommendation of Legislative Fiscals.
I'll move that recommendation and send it to full Ways and Means.
Having heard the narrative and the recommendation at this particular time from Legislative Fiscals, Senator Stroh now moves the governor's budget in the amount of $5,351,535 in general funds and $779,803 in other funds for a total funds of $6,131,338 with 29 full-time equivalency positions. Are there any objections to that motion? If not, we'll order that to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. We will go ahead then and close the hearing on the House Bill 5025. Thank you very much. Thank you for the governor's staff and Department of Administrative Services for bearing with us through these number of good months. Thank you very much. We will now open the public hearing portion of Capital Construction, Senate Bill 5527. We have with us Georgine Bailey, representing the Legislative Fiscal Office, Jamie Payne, the dean of our clerk. Let's see. Georgine, would you like to start out?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. We do have before us the Capital Construction Bill. There are a number of agencies within this bill who have projects within this bill. Three agencies have had their budget turned before the subcommittee, but there hasn't been a specific recommendation yet. So what we're going to do today is, what I proposed in there for the committee's consideration, is to start off with Mr. Bill McGee giving the Department of Administrative Services sort of overview of the entire bill, and then we could hear from those three agencies, the Department of Administrative Services, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Oregon Youth Authority extending their project, if that's okay with the committee.
Let's go ahead and start with Mr. Bill McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. And as Ms. Bailey indicated, I'd like to start out and just present to you very briefly the Governor's revised budget for capital construction. Senate Bill 5527 does cover all agencies except the Department of Higher Education, which is in a separate bill. Capital Construction Bill establishes authority for planning and design, land acquisition, and construction projects that cost over $500,000. Each project must be approved individually by the legislature. Project approvals, appropriations, and expenditure limitations expire for 6 years. The projects that we're asking you to approve today would expire on June 30th of 2005.
The governor's revised budget for the next biennium has a number of different projects and covers 9 different agencies. The projects expand the capacity in the adult prisons as the population continues to grow, begins to restore the aging buildings of the State Fair, buys land, improves airports at Aurora and Celeste Bay, improves fish hatcheries at Willamette Falls and Bonneville, finishes rebuilding the Forestry Department Salem Complex, replaces improved National Guard buildings around the state, depending on the availability of federal funds, and maintains services and state offices throughout the state. The next 2.5 pages are a list of the particular projects and then the governor's revised budget. Ms. Bailey indicated the Department of Administrative Services, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Northern Youth Authority have issues that haven't been approved in subcommittee prior to today, so they'll be making presentations for you as well. The remaining departments are here if you have questions on specific projects. While this is the governor's revised budget, the subcommittee did make a couple of changes to 4 agencies, I believe, and I believe your legislative fiscal staff will be presenting you those committee changes the governor's revised. Just on the 4th page, just to get on the record, the projects that we have changed since the bill was filed, the governor's revised changes. The Department of Corrections, we've requested 2 $1 other fund expenditure limitations for Senate Bill 1185 projects in Wright and Lincoln counties. Those are projects that were funded originally by Senate Bill 1145 for the counties to maintain populations in local jails or other means of custody for offenders who were sentenced to less than a year incarceration. And the state has provided funds here.
Which counties were they?
That was Lake and Lincoln counties.
Okay, it shows Klamath in Lincoln County.
Well, Lake Klamath is having a single project. They're working together. And we'll be back to the emergency board when those projects are fully defined and have the full cost for you. There were 3 issues. The governor's revised the Oregon Youth Authority, $134,700 other funds to design a new administration building at the McClure Youth Correction Facility. The Public Safety Subcommittee did hear and recommend that item. The following 2 are issues that have risen since the Public Safety Subcommittee heard the Youth Authority budget. One is requesting a $300,000 increase in federal funds passed through the Department of State Police for construction of the Eastern Oregon Boot Camp. That project has begun. Issue for testimony on it. We need initial limitations to finish it. And finally, we're asking to shift $100,000 other funds from a 97-99 expenditure limitations for furnishings and landscaping to a 97-99 expenditure limitation for fences at McLaren and Hillcrest. We have some additional limitations in the furnishings item, and we need some additional limitations in the fences to complete the project. That would be my overview. I can answer questions, or you can
begin. Mr. Chair. President
Krupp is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page number 4 on the back, talking about the Women's Prison Intake Center supplemental, that's $22 million. What is that for specifically in terms of a supplemental item, and why is it in a budget now when the authority was obviously granted previously?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, the emergency board in, I believe it was January 1997, established the expenditure limitation for this. It's been adjusted a couple of times, and it's 156.4, I think, now. As the project is currently estimated, we need some additional funds to finish construction of that facility, so we're asking for that original limitation to be increased. I'll point out the subcommittee, public safety subcommittee, reduced that $22.1 million by $1.9 million, and your staff will have, after some further review, we have some additional reduction to that limitation.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Follow-up, Representative Krupp.
Now, this is supplemental. This $22 million, was it ever figured into the original estimates of the project, or is this an additional expenditure above what we were told was the amount it's going to take to produce this facility?
This is an addition to what the cost was estimated at a year and a half ago when we started, but it is the current cost of the design, which has seen a number of efficiencies that the department can speak to, and does represent the cost of constructing the facility today.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may,
please.
So, I hope I'm not hearing from you that because we delayed construction, that's going to cost us $22 million more?
Mr. Chair, there has been a cost because of the delay of construction. This is also some design issues and infrastructure issues as well. Yeah.
Senator Crow is recognized.
Could you explain to me the $1 appropriations for the military department projects, and what does that allow to happen?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, those are essentially placeholders for issues that we hope to receive federal funding for during the biennium. And so if that funding comes through, we will be back to the emergency board to request the appropriate amount of limitation.
I wonder, has the military department considered a problem at Camp Adair at the firing range, and whether or not they have suggested some expenditures there to build some berms to reduce the noise level that's very aggravating to the neighbors who live around it?
Mr. Chair, that issue has been discussed. The military department is here if you'd like to hear from them on that issue.
I was hoping that they would make some progress in that. I represent that area along with Representative Shetterly, and Representative Roth and others have been involved in that issue, and we had some promises from the military that they would do some things out there to lessen the noise level. And I don't know whether they're doing it or not, but I'd be glad to hear from them.
That'd be fine as a portion of the testimony. I think that it's appropriate to go ahead and hear at this time from the military department.
I don't want to spend a lot of your time, but I just like to know if they have anything that they're planning.
I know there's been an ongoing issue. I heard it during the interim at most of the e-boards, so mm-hmm. We're probably about to have it again.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Crow, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. To answer your question directly, sir, the budget request that we asked for to address that issue was not funded in the budget. However, having said that, in the state budget, our plan is presently, with our federal resources that we anticipate in our federal budget, 1st of October, our initial plan is to go in and line the sides of the concrete abutments that you witnessed out there with sound absorbing material. We also have a plan in on the shelf, and the reason it's on the shelf is that it took the cooperation of Oregon State University to move their football field, their old football field, out to Camp Adair and build a berm. That didn't occur because they changed their mind at the 11th hour and went to a natural turf, which eliminated over 10,000 yards of material that we were going to use for that very thing. We're still looking for a resource to put the berm up, physically put the berm up behind that firing line. The most expedient method and cheapest method is to put those sound-absorbing materials in that canal, as you saw.
I would encourage you to do some things out there because the relations with the neighbors is really very, very poor and deteriorating, and if they just saw some action on your part to try to lessen the noise, I think it would be very important. If you can get a berm out there and do some other things, I think it will show some good faith.
That still is our intention, and we're going to continue to work that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you very much, Mr. Caldwell. Colonel Caldwell. Okay. Further questions, Mr. McGee, relative to the issues that are before us? And do I understand that such departments as the Department of Transportation, employment, corrections, those have been previously heard? For instance, corrections have been heard in the public safety, I would think. Senator Thames has been a part of that. Perhaps the Senate Bill 1145 projects, Lake Klamath and Lincoln counties, looks like you're a placeholder on those two counties. Could you give us a brief explanation of the 1145 issues there?
Yes, Mr. Chair. To the first part of your question, the Public Safety Subcommittee has heard all of the Department of Corrections items, including the 1145 issues. when the Senate Bill 1145 is passed and the counties agreed to take custody of inmates who have been convicted to sentences of less than a year, the state began to agree to assist them in the construction of facilities to house those inmates. The authority to build those prisons, local prisons, would expire on essentially the end of the last the plan that just ended. And there were these two projects that had not gotten resolved earlier. The counties had not determined what their needs were for Senate Bill 1145. They've come forward. They've filed notices of intent. The designs are still being reviewed. We don't have final decisions on the type of facility and the size and the use and the cost. When we do, the Department of Corrections will be back in the emergency board to ask you what for the final limitations.
Thank you very much. Then those that have not been previously heard include those that will be coming through the Department of Administrative Services. There is some, I have some narratives that I have had access to in a longer form. I just wonder if any of the members of the committee are going down that rather lengthy list of a total of $8,146,222, if there are questions relative to any of those items. One item that the Justice Building planning at $1.5 million. And the capital structure, capital mall parking structure plan, maybe those, I know that we, on the Capital Planning Commission, we had a budget note on their budget relative to any further projects that there would be certain notice given to the legislative members relative to the projects that were being planned. And before you went to design permit, I think that where we're talking about a justice building planning at $1.5 million, I think we've got some siting issues that appeared to be well in progress there. Maybe you could fill us in on what's happening there and in the current biennium, please, Mr. D.
Mr. Chair, if I could, Dave White, the administrator of the Department of Administrative Services Facilities Division, is here to discuss those projects, so if I could ask him to come to the table.
I'll do one. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Dave White, administrator of the Facilities Division, Department of Administrative Services. The two buildings that you referred to, or two structures that you referred to, are both in the very entry phase of the four-year cycle planning facility. And so those will, we're requesting now just planning and design funds. We'll come back to the legislature next session with a request for any funding of the project itself. So there is quite a distance to go yet. Those projects would be constructed in 2001 to 2003 and later. So they are projects are out some way. In fact, in the handout which I've provided today, and I'm looking at the second page, the mall parking structure, we have a conceptual cost of unknown time, unknown place, and unknown size. So I think there's a lot of room left for planning in that process. The Justice Building has actually been in one or another phase of planning since 1990. It has been discussed since long before 1990, but it has been fundamentally at about the point where it is now in planning since then, and is just really, this is a proposal to move it forward so you can actually have some substance there around which the Capital Planning Commission can do its evaluation.
Sure. Representative Krupp is recognized.
Thank you. If it's been in planning since in some form since 1990, we're going to appropriate another $1.5 million. How much money have we spent on planning so far on this project?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I can't answer that. I could find it for you. It is actually, we haven't gone to this phase. We've never gone to a design phase, and that's where the real cost lies. When I say it's been planned, it's been on a map. It's been discussed. It hasn't been laid out in that sense. And
And really, this is the natural initial, I guess I'd say, expensive step. You just don't get to what is it really going to cost, where do we really locate it, how will it really work without spending these funds.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, what are we going to get for $1.5 million?
We should get the design, the request for proposal or for bids. We'll be ready to go to construction, ultimately, and be back next session asking for the authority to do that.
And how much do we normally, in terms of a percentage of a $40 million project, how much do you normally spend on these types of issues?
We can ask the state architect here with you to give a figure, but I think the actual issue is not so much the size of the project, but it could vary a lot according to the conditions under which the project could be built, the site, the nature of the project, for example. I mean, one of my responses initially, and I'm not an engineer or architect, was look how little we have on the mall parking structure there. But the parking structure doesn't have all of the mechanical systems, heating, ventilating, air conditioning, and so on. So all of those factors are involved. We actually have quite a bit of experience with what we build here on the mall, obviously. And so when we come in with an estimate there of $1.5 million for this phase, I think we can say with some confidence that that is based on experience, that is where we would be.
Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Wright?
Senator Timms.
I beg your pardon. Senator Timms recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last session, refresh my memory. Last session, we had a special committee for capital construction, and we were very upset because of what had happened with the tax magistrate and the building that was built across here in the corner, which, if proper planning would have been done in the process, it would have been out here in part of the mall in the capital, as far as the Justice Total Center, which, if you go back and go through the arithmetic and what that's costing, we could have had our own building and done it a lot cheaper. So we have set up a process. And can you describe the process that we set up? I'm having a little problem remembering it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Timms, I think you're referring to the Capital Projects Advisory Board that was created. The legislation itself provides that the board may be used. I'll say this first, may do this, may do that. We're reading that now to say shall. So we're taking all of the mays that are in the statute and saying that is what we'll do. It's really an excellent piece of legislation. What it says is that we'll have the Capital Projects Advisory Board. They will review every agency's long-term facilities plan. They will review their how they take care of their existing structures. And they will review their spending on deferred maintenance and on preventative maintenance and so on. They will then also be reviewing their project proposals very early in the process. For example, they're new now, but had they been in existence 4 years ago, they would have seen this justice building long before we put it on paper to bring it here. And they would have been testing it against all those other issues before it got to that point. A major lease, which gets to some of those issues, will go through the same process there. So they really are a filter that will deal with all agencies, all projects, except higher ed, of course. And I think except lottery, you know, a few of those usual exceptions. But they will go through the projects with us, advising us and the agency, and then when it comes to you, you'll know that it's been put through that thorough analysis and process.
Now, which you never did before.
Agreed. There has never been a statewide process to look at how much we own, how much we manage, how much we spend on this, is each done agency by agency. This is a real watershed change in how we go at it. We're working hard on it right now. But I did mention in here, they were under construction themselves during this buy-in. So they've looked at these projects, but they didn't get them early enough, as we will from on into the future.
So who sits on this capital projects board?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Krupp, I'm going to have a hard time with my memory here. I think maybe I can get some help. Bill Nealon is retired from the Department of Higher Education and serves on everything that has facilities on its name, does an excellent job for us. We have a member from the Port of Portland. We have a member formerly from the Salem Kaiser School System. We have engineer and someone from Legacy Hospitals. Thank you. I hear a voice saying Northwest Natural Gas. They really are professionals in a variety of areas, all with facilities. And interestingly, they approach this because they don't have any vested interest in these particular buildings. But otherwise, they approach it just almost exactly as we do. They have the same problems. I mean, we learn from each other. We sit there and look at an issue, and everybody around the table has this issue. So it really is a very helpful process. They are not in any tight connection with any part of the state, so they're really very objective.
Paul, okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The scoping process that the Capital Projects Advisory Board does, they actually will make the consultations on long-term lease versus purchase and construction. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, in some ways, I would say that's true. We'll probably do the calculations and present them to them. We're going to be staff to that board. They're advising us. But yes, that's right. Those calculations will be done, and they will evaluate them. Their plan is, and this is a joint planning operation. We're kind of going back and forth and working out the language. They don't intend to look at design elements. Should this building be done in a light pink brick or what? They're not going to get to that. They're not going to get to the planning and zoning issues, such as the Capital Planning Commission does, but they are going to work almost exclusively in those areas of, is this economical? Is this the prudent judgment? And really, their focus, as they intended at this point, will be, has the agency gone through this process in a rational way? They are less inclined initially, and of course it will evolve over time, to say to the agency, this is the way you should do it, but rather to say, have you made these calculations? Why is this factor there? And why are you doing it this way? I think it's a discipline that the state's never had.
So the filtering process actually acts with a great deal of dialogue between the parties.
Yes, sir.
Further questions or comments relative to the major construction budget, 1999-201, as presented by Mr. White? Let me just ask this about the Capitol Mall parking structure. That planning, is that to accommodate additional parking for the Justice Building, is that correct? Are we out of parking now?
Mr. Chair, the situation is that we are continually packing more people onto the mall. We've done it with Systems Furniture. We've added the equivalent of almost a full building, more of people here without building a building. When we put in the Justice Building, we'll be taking out some of the parking that's there and putting some in a underground structure, but not enough. The same thing's happening on the North Mall building. We'll be putting in underground parking, but you can't ever get enough under a building. So it really is to accommodate all of those issues, that we're adding buildings, we're adding people without adding buildings, and we have a waiting list that in some cases is 700 names long for parking. Now, we've discussed this before, and as you know, the goal is not necessarily to provide a space for everybody with a car. But right now the pressure is about as high as it can get, and certainly there's going to be some need. That, by the way, would be paid for by the space rent from the Parkers.
Is that a break-even proposition when you're done?
Mr. Chair, yes, it is intended to be, although, again, reminding you that our budget, we're funding out of those rents the park and ride system, which gets people out of cars, and the free bus pass system, which gets them out of cars. So it's really, the whole thing is just to manage the automobiles in the mall. It's not a convenience issue.
The park and ride and free bus pass, how does that seem to work overall?
So far, it's a booming business. We're occupying a lot that the Capital Planning Commission has not authorized us to occupy. We're doing it just temporarily while the legislature's in session, but it's it's exceeding our expectations.
Wonderful. Any other questions? Senator Farrell is recognized.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to recap of that last comment. It's not an energy efficiency issue, it's a convenience issue. The parking structure isn't.
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrell, no, just the opposite. I was saying that it is not a convenience issue. We're not trying to provide parking just to provide parking. We're really trying to manage the automobiles out of the mall area as much as we can. That's the major function. The discussion that we had with the chair, I think, when we were in as an agency, was that in some areas a merchant has to provide two spaces for every employee. Here the city wants us to do just the opposite, provide fewer spaces, move people's cars out of this area. And the same thing is true in Portland, Eugene, all of the metropolitan areas.
I'm sure we tried that in some of the metropolitan areas in the valley and ended up urban renewalizing old structures into the major downtown areas and effectively killed the downtown area in Eugene. It had to be reopened and restructured and re-energized, and it's only now coming out of a 25-year decline. And I'm wondering, we don't have a commercial center in the same sense here, but accessibility is certainly an issue for people that come, constituents that come from sometimes many miles away, many hours away, and find it inconvenient to partake in governmental processes simply because we've engineered them out of this process. I'm not sure that's such a good idea.
Mr. Chair, I might say we totally agree, and I know the example you're talking about. That is not the direction we're headed in at all. We have a unique situation here, though, I think that we all recognize, and that is that when the citizens often really want to be here is during the 6 months of the session.
When we really don't want to be.
Well, it's almost impossible to build in the capacity to handle that 6 months at the same level that we can handle it off-season. So it is a unique situation, but it's a balancing act, and we work very closely with the city to make sure that we're providing. We're talking mostly about employees and how much do we accommodate that parking stress.
Thank you very much. That still continues to be a concern, I think, for us all relative to the issues of the session and. I'm pleased to know that the issue of park and ride does work somewhat for the employees, but it is a problem or an inconvenience for our constituents who may come from long distance or those others who may arrive here to offer testimony and find that there's absolutely no place to park and know nothing about the park and ride system. So. Any further comments or questions to Mr. Wallace?
Briefly, if we go to a 9 or a 10-month session, will that tend to spread that parking load over a longer period of time?
Mr. Chair, if we can rely on it, we can build the capacity to match the need.
Okay.
Don't do it. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. White. Maybe we could have Colonel Caldwell come back up, if you would, for just a moment. I have one further comment or question. President Messer is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking under this memorandum, I guess. The $1 fee, I assume that means that the funding will come from other sources, but I'm concerned on the Salem Center that there's no $1 from federal funds. Could you explain?
Mr. Chairman, that was already established in previous budget, so it doesn't need to be duplicated. The federal authorization, that project we've been working on for about 5 years, at least 5 years in joint cooperation with the Oregon State Police and Emergency Management. This year is probably the closest that we've come so far, as Congress has marked it in both the Senate Appropriations and Senate Authorization Committee. They're going to conference probably after the 4th of July break. We anticipate being funded on it in the previous budget, so we didn't have to bring it forward. The project is about a $17 million project.
Is that project have anything to do with a portion of the work that's being done or the facility that's on the state fairground?
Mr. Chairman, no. This project is scheduled for State Street. Mr. Hawthorne would be east on State. pretty close to the freeway.
Separate and apart from any activity on the state fairgrounds?
Yes, sir.
And the long-term projection of the fairground facility?
Long-term projection is we're going to maintain that facility. Our oldest armory in the state is in Dallas. It is a 1903-08 armory. As we start looking, as we've looked at our total capacity for armories, it's in our best interest to try to consolidate as opposed to try to replicate each one of those, particularly given the age and the maintenance requirements on them. So Salem Fairground Armory will remain. It's 40 years old, but that's a lot better than 80 years old, 90 years old.
Senator Troll asked me to ask about the readiness center for Ontario. He's interested in that.
Also interested in the Dallas Armory. It's not going to be closed, by the way.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Crow, not immediately, no, but it is in our long-range plans that we will see rebuilding that at this point because of the proximity with Salem and the ability to get cars in here and park them, so we thought that we would keep it here. But proximity-wise, it works very well for us, and we also have a facility in Monmouth, as you're aware. So with the two facilities, we don't see that as our highest and best priority, which goes back to Ontario, which is, as we look at our armies, we look at them in sizes. These are major facilities here, like the one we're talking about on State Street, and we get east of the Cascades or further away from the metropolitan area, we start looking at smaller armories as in Ontario. That armory is designed. We received federal funds to design that 3 years ago. I think it's 90-95% designed at this point. What we're waiting for on that is the federal authorization. That is a 75-25% armory, 75% federal, 25% state. We do not have the federal money to build it. We don't anticipate it this year. It's not in the federal budget. And we're not real sure it'll be in next year's budget either, unless there's a change in how they decide to fund things in Congress. And there's been a real lack of money. And obviously, since Senator Hatfield retired, and there's not a lot of money, and you don't have anybody back there to help you out, it gets real tough.
I guess they can send it for K-12, but we need help there.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate that. It's our 95% design on some of these facilities. It's just and priority, do you have ideas? Warrington, Clackamas, Legals, Salem, and Ontario, is this the priority under which they're listed?
Mr. Chairman, pretty close. And the reason I say that is not an exact science. The reason that is we're very dependent on Congress and what maybe perhaps is, for lack of a better term, what's in vogue in Congress. And if it's in vogue to build the smaller armories that particular budget cycle, then we want to be able to have the facilities ready to go in order to capitalize on those opportunities. We have other opportunities that come through federal property, if you will, like the two air bases that you don't see in this budget that actually very well may be built before these others. So it depends on just exactly how the funding cycle goes at the federal level. We believe we need to be ready and have the projects available. Senator Hatfield's strategy before he retired was to get as much planning money as he could to the Oregon Guard in order to put us in a position so if and when they did start funding the construction, we would be able to capitalize on that opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Further questions? Senator Ferriola is recognized.
Well, I guess since we've got the update on on Dallas, I'd like to similar update on the Baker City armory project.
It's not on here. It must be very low priority. Right after Ontario. and Baker City.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ferriola, the process we have in Eastern Oregon right now is Baker City falls in behind the Dalles. We have Ontario, the Dalles, then Baker City. Baker City is not in this budget for design. It's not designed. We have Ontario designed 95%. The Dalles is in about 25-30% design stage right now, and then Baker City would be the next up on the list. We typically use federal money for design. We don't have the federal money to design Baker at this time. We're working very diligently with the National Guard Bureau to forward that money and put it on a on a schedule so we can get it designed. I can't sit here and guarantee you that we will have that this year. However, we are making great strides, and we do have a little friend. We have some friends in the factory, and General Reese is back there now, so we're hoping that perhaps he can see his way to get that funded this session after they get their money and get that funded through the National Guard Bureau. That's our effort, and that's our plan.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Other questions then of Colonel Caldwell? Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it. Appreciate that update. Further questions relative to the Department of Administrative Service issues, that $8.1 million. Let's see. There has been presented today, well, let's see. Let's continue on with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We had, that was the second that we'd had no prior committee. And Mr. Williams, Steve Williams from the Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Steve Williams, Deputy Director, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. What I'd like to do is just give you a brief overview of these three projects and answer any questions you may have. The first project there at Willamette Falls, these are National Marine Fisheries Service dollars, federal dollars, associated with repair of the fishways and the water flow systems and the counting facility that we use at Willamette Falls. This is the second phase and the final phase of the repairs that we've been conducting there at Willamette Falls. And these dollars came to us from National Marine Fisheries Service largely as a result, but not entirely, of impacts we had from the 1996 flood when the Willamette raised that particular year. Our counting facilities, our pumps, our many of the fishway walls that are within Willamette Falls eroded, broke down. We lost those pumps. We have repaired some of those. This will complete that fishway restoration. There are four fishways at Willamette Falls, or four entrances. There is one exit at the falls, and these fish are all brought through and counted. We're talking about fish that are listed by the National Marine Fisheries Service, spring chinook, steelhead. So this facility is important to us. This facility was last worked on or last repaired in 1960, and we've been successful in getting National Marine Fisheries Service in this one case to supply funds to repair that particular facility. The remaining two projects are associated with our Bonneville Fish Hatchery, another federally funded facility. The first item there, these are Corps, U.S. Corps of Engineers, and National Marine Fisheries Service dollars split. We're talking about resurfacing 20 ponds at Bonneville Fish Hatchery. There are approximately 40 ponds there in which we raise steelhead and chinook and coho. These facilities, basically what happens is that our ponds are watered up and dewatered several times annually. And these were built in the 60s again. And as you water and dewater those ponds, as well as disinfect and power wash those ponds, the pond walls tend to crumble. And what occurs in those rearing facilities, if you get cracks and crumbling in those pond walls, you start to have impacts on the juvenile fish that you're rearing, and you have difficulty with disease issues that may arise as a result of those problems with the ponds. The final project there refers to our adult holding and what we call our juvenile acclimation facilities at Bonneville Dam. We hold a number of adults prior to spawning at that facility of all species. And one of the issues that we have to deal with routinely in our hatchery culture operations is what we call pre-spawning mortality. If you don't have the adequate facilities to hold those fish, water flows, facilities which don't injure the fish, you end up losing a higher than normal number prior to the time you get to take the eggs from them for your hatchery operation. We also have juvenile acclimation facilities there. The term acclimation is used. Basically what we do is we rear the fish, hold them there. They're direct release from the facility. And what it ensures for us is that those fish return back to the facility. Many of you may have heard the issue with wild versus hatchery. This is one of the tools we use to avoid having additional hatchery fish or larger than we want hatchery fish numbers to end up on the spawning grounds with wild fish. This facility is necessary to accomplish that. These are large holding facilities. Bonneville Hatchery is the largest facility we have in the state, so they're dealing with very large numbers of fish, and consequently the dollars to repair and upgrade these facilities are very high. As I said, all of these programs are federal dollars from either National Marine Fisheries Service or the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
And the adult fish which would be held at the Bonneville facility, those are natural fish, or are those are Navy fish, or are those would be hatchery fish?
Chair Butler, those particular fish that are being held there are from hatchery origin. They are hatchery stocks that we maintain there. We have a large number of different brood stocks that we hold at the facility. The fish from Bonneville Hatchery are released throughout the Columbia Basin, both up above Bonneville Dam as well as below Bonneville Dam for a number of different programs, but they all are of hatchery origin.
Those are held for some period of time, allowing the Navy fish to bypass the facilities. Is that what the theory is?
The hatchery fish, that they are of hatchery origin from the facility itself, we are attempting to direct them straight back into our Bonneville hatchery facility so that we can take eggs and sperm from them for our hatchery culture. What we are trying to do, when I mentioned acclimation, what we are trying to do is purposely direct them to the facility so that they will not go on with the wild fish up into other spawning areas, in what natural spawning areas.
Very same naturally recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you got the stock for those hatcheries from wild stocks, would this still be an issue? Would you still have the need for the holding tanks? Because at that point, there would not be a conflict if they went back to the wild, would there?
Chair Butler, Representative Nesley. We would still need those facilities if our goal, which is where we are headed in terms of starting to use more and more of wild stocks as our hatchery brood stock, we would still need to have the facilities if our goal is to increase the numbers. If you're trying to, which is our goal, to increase the numbers for both harvest and for benefits to the wild fish, you would still need the facilities in order to keep that brood stock alive and effective. You would still have to have those facilities to bring those fish in, to maintain your egg banks and be able to rear those fish on an annual basis.
Follow up, sir. But my question is, it's a considerable amount of money, and we're getting criticized, all of us, for wasting money on the Columbia River and those programs. If we go to a program where you get your stocks from wild fish, would you need to enhance this capacity as you are with this budget?
Chair Butler, Representative Mesley. My staff indicates to me that we would, because of the large volume of fish that we do rear there now. If there were major changes in the programs themselves in terms of either the funding base or the number of fish we reared there, that may not be an issue. But for all of the planning efforts that we have before us today in working with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and National Fisheries Service, we believe these are important to maintain the programs as we have them on the books today.
So what you're trying to prevent is straying into the wild stocks.
Chair Butler, Representative Mesley, both trying to prevent straying into the wild stocks, but at the same time giving ourselves the directed opportunity to bring those fish into the facility to maintain our egg banks and to maintain the hatchery product that we're rearing there. It's twofold. It's both directing the fish to the facility so we don't have to go out and gather those fish up at some other location, but at the same time it serves a purpose to also avoid having those hatchery fish stray into the wild stocks.
I assume fish stray both ways, hatchery fish into the wild and wild fish into the hatcheries. In your facilities at the hatcheries, what percentage of wild fish do you get in?
Chair Butler, Representative Mesley. Interestingly enough, it is very rare that you will pick up wild fish unless you have a full blockage, if you will, at that location. The wild fish tend to home fairly directly, depending upon the species, but they tend to home fairly directly back to the stream of origin in which they came. So it's a very small percentage, unless we are actually trying to block and bring those fish in directly. I mean, if volitionally or voluntarily, you would not normally pull a lot of wild fish into any of the facilities that we run, but you can set it up such that you will. Particularly, we do that in locations where we are trying to build that brood stock.
I guess this is probably an accountant's question and really doesn't do much for all of this, but were records kept back at the turn of the century when we had hatcheries in Ontario on the Snake River before there were any dams in the rivers? Were records kept of the actual type of fish wild versus native year after year as they were released back in the early 1900s. I understand from a newspaper article I picked up a couple of years ago that Ontario at one time out on one of the islands there was one of the largest fish hatcheries in the United States. But records weren't kept of which kind of fish were being brought from where to be released. Can you what's happened to the blending of native and wild fish in that process?
Chair Butler, you're correct. There were very limited records back in the early days of the fish culture operations. In some cases, the individuals who were working with those fish were not always even aware of, in some cases, the species that they were dealing with. So the records are fairly limited. Since the building of the dams on the Columbia River and obviously the mitigation facilities that were built to mitigate for the construction of the dams, we have very good records as to the species present. Undoubtedly, there were mixing of stocks and mixing of different strains of fish from different streams throughout. But in general, what we've seen is that those fish that were best adapted to that particular location or that particular stream, even when we introduced some of the stocks that were maybe not as compatible, those stocks that were adapted to the stream were the ones that won out, if you will, in terms of maintaining their populations.
It's interesting where fish would do that, and yet things like kochia and other weeds like that seem to do a lot better in places where they weren't native at all. But animals seem to do that. Same with certain birds and so forth. The Willamette Falls fish ferry, is it some type of a fish ladder? I guess it must. Does it raise to the level of the fish ladder? The second phase of the
Chair Butler, yes, there are a series of basically four fish ladders around Willamette Falls. I don't know the lift in elevation there, but any of you who've seen Willamette Falls, it's a fairly substantial lift that those fish have to get over. There's a large counting facility, not as large as the facility you might see when you tour Bonneville Dam, but we have a fairly sophisticated counting facility within the Willamette Falls complex where we count year-round species of salmon, steelhead, trout as they move over the fishway.
Any further questions for Mr. Williams? Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Okay, we do have some folks from out of town, and there is an amendment that has been passed around. I believe it's been passed around, a -2 amendment. And I understand there's some folks from out of town, and this probably falls under Parks and Recreation, which is not one of the subcategories, so we probably just add that to page 4. President Messer, would you like to just introduce that gas to amendment, please?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got handed this today myself. It's actually on page 5 to insert number 8. State Parks and Recreation Department. And I would really like for the people from the Port of Brookings Harbor to and Ken Armstrong and Red Pratt to just come up and explain the situation with the chair.
Okay.
They do it much better than that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Ken Armstrong, here today representing the Port of Brookings Harbor. With me is Russ Crabtree, manager for the Port of Brookings Harbor. We'll be brief. I've handed out to you a list of our talking points. We, too, have just seen the Dash 2s, and I want to speak to those, give you a little bit of perspective on them, and talk about the detail. Port of Brookings Harbor, just to give you the context in which these amendments are being offered, has since the late, approximately since the late 1980s, been providing services at the port, at the Sport Haven Beach area for parking control, restrooms, maintenance, trash collection, security, beach access, handicap access, et cetera, at Sport Haven Beach. And these services have, on average, cost the port in the neighborhood of $30,000 to $35,000 annually. The port receives no financial return for that investment. It is somewhat under dispute who actually owns this particular piece of property that we're talking about. The port owns the upland, but we've had some serious erosion problems down at Sport Haven Beach since 1996 that have required, well, actually since prior to 1996, but in 1996, the Port of Brookings Harbor entered into a loan grant agreement with the Economic Development Department to place a revetment there to protect against some real serious erosion problems they've had there that threaten the long-term viability of both the beach, the public access to the beach, and then also the port's upland RV park and access road facilities. The amendments that we're offering to Senate Bill 5527 call for state parks to develop a plan for financial participation with the port for maintenance and management of Sport Haven Beach, and the services that state parks would be obligated to participate on are those mentioned above that generally protects public access and safety at the beach. The amendment that you have in your hand, the Dash 2s, do not speak to this issue, but we would offer it as a conceptual amendment to the Dash 2s that would require state parks to come back within 6 months, perhaps, to the emergency board and outline a plan for state participation with the port for the financial management, maintenance, et cetera, of Sport Haven Beach. In our view, there's really two public policy reasons for doing it. One, state of Oregon should have an obligation to help promote public access and safety at public beaches. And I would emphasize this point, when it doesn't unfairly advantage a private property owner, as it does not in this case, because the port would be the upland owner, which is a public entity. And secondly, that the Port of Brookings Harbor has very responsibly, in our view, filled a public facility maintenance vacuum and has assumed a significant financial obligation down there. Their loan that they have assumed through the Economic Development Department has been in the neighborhood of $360,000 with a similar amount that was granted. We're asking that state parks be a participating partner with the port to maintain public access and public safety, et cetera, at Sport Haven Beach. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Crabtree for just a couple of other comments.
I would thank you very much for the record. I'm Russell Crabtree, Executive Director of the Port of Brookings Harbor. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just add some real brief comments. My comments being that Sport Haven Beach is 1,600 lineal feet long. The Port of Brookings Harbor in 1996 constructed a revetment there, and that was done to protect public access to Sport Haven Beach. In addition to that, we do what we call beach nourishment. Beach nourishment is done by the Federal U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It's placed in 20 feet of water. That replenishes and protects against future erosion. Since 1996, that project has exceeded our expectation. We currently have a 150-meter beach here that the public has the ability to enjoy. We provide what we call ADA or handicap accessible access on an annual basis to across this revetment, which we constructed. We do that in the form of placement of gangways on an annual basis. In addition to that, there was $671,000 of federal investment in the South Yeti area, which tied into Sports Haven Beach. The access road in 1995 was severely compromised. We have a user base from the Rogue Valley area of approximately 200,000 people that visit this area annually. And I'd like to just state that this 4th of July weekend, there was over 12,000 people that came to the port facilities, and I would estimate that at least one-third of those were on Sports Haven Beach for the 4th of July celebration for a three-day period. Thank you.
Thank you. Listen, Mr. Lee, would you have a comment relative to this particular proposed amendment?
As was stated, Mr. Chair, there is a conceptual addition that we need to make.
which would require the Parks Department to develop a report on the maintenance of this facility and report back to the board.
Chair, do we have that amendment in front of us? I don't find it in my papers.
Sheriff, I might, I'd really like to comment that the court over the years has tried to work in agreement with the Parks Department and has been unsuccessful in getting any assistance in maintaining this facility. And not only the physical facility of the beach itself, but in, as was stated, in the access, the restroom, the cleanup, debris from storms and all these costs which have to be borne by someone, and it is for the purpose of this highly used beach, which is owned by the state park.
State park system. Do we have an estimated cost amount for the Fort Haven Beach, Curry County State Parks and Recreation Department portion of that? I recognize state parks is a separate budget and has separate funds, including your capital funds.
I would defer to you.
Mr. Chair, Ken Armstrong again. Our estimate is that we'd be looking at an not to exceed amount of $50,000 annually.
$100,000 for the biennium?
Correct.
What kind of dollars are these? Are these general fund dollars?
Chair, Senator Trow, I guess that would be an issue to work through with the state parks budget, and I'm not directly sure how to answer that. I assume you're not talking about the court's budget. You're talking about the state parks budget that would be asked to do the reimbursement. Is that correct, Senator?
Yes. I just suddenly see we're having another project here. Most of these are funded with other funds. I think with the single exception of the $1 for the military department projects, most everything else is an other fund expenditure. And I just wondered if this was different, if this was going to be general fund.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I guess I would suggest that that would be something that state parks could come and propose to the E-Board, how they would plan to structure that. I don't presume to know enough about their budget as to where they would see that going.
Was this proposal made before to be included and rejected, or is this the first time this proposal comes forward?
There's a couple of ways to answer that, Senator Trow.
Just directly.
Well, this is the first time that this issue has come up before this legislature, if that's the question. But it is an issue that we have talked about with state parks even prior to the session and to other public entities. For a little bit more background, when the court entered into the agreement, the Lone Grant Agreement in 1996, a whole group of folks, including Representative Messerly and others, were called to the table to try and work through what can we do to solve this erosion problem. No one was stepping up with money. The port said, we will go on the hook for this obligation, but we want everyone to understand we will be coming back to the legislature for assistance to help us with the burden that we're going to be incurring. And that's kind of the genesis of this.
Is there a precedent for that happening in other ports that they need to do things like this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I'm not sure. Certainly not with state parks. I'm trying to think if there has been a precedent with other agencies, but nothing jumps to mind immediately.
Is your precedent with a county assuming the responsibilities for a state park and maintaining it, including the various improvements that you indicated been made here, some rather substantial improvements that have been constructed by the state, but then maintained by Fort Haven Beach and including all of the $35,000 a year annual maintenance with no financial return?
Mr. Chair, I couldn't answer with certainty. I would hazard a guess that counties have helped with those types of things in the past relative to other ports, but I would be reluctant to say anything stronger than that. And let me emphasize that we are not asking state parks to assume the obligation that the port took on. We're simply asking state parks to help with the ongoing maintenance slash management costs that are incurred by the port for the public benefit. And the obligation for the revetment continues to fall to the port when that obligation becomes due starting in the year 2002.
Senator Crowe.
Yeah, the amount then that it will cost the state parks is basically $50,000 a year to do what you're allocating. You're suggesting they do the management and whatever else. Is that it?
Mr. Chair, I might also let Mr. Crabtree answer this, Senator Crowe, but I think $50,000 would be a not to exceed amount. And if the state parks came in to the e-board 6 months from now and said, this is what we think is an equitable cost share agreement between state parks and the port, that'd be something that we'd be, you know, amenable to and be willing to negotiate with state parks. Is that a fair statement?
And did state parks at any point when it was considering its budget consider this as part of its budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, no. Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, I did talk to Director Minen at the outset of the session to say we would like to see if we could have this included in State Park's budget. His answer to me was essentially no. We don't have enough resources for it. You can get the legislature to put some resources towards it, great. But it was determined that probably this was going to be a better approach than actually making a direct allocation through the State Park's budget.
Thank you very much. Let's see, we do have Mr. Jim Lockwood here from the State Parks. Perhaps Mr. Lockwood would like to make a comment relative to the proposal at hand.
Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee, thanks for the opportunity. I'm Jim Lockwood, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. I'm not sure quite where to pick up. We do have a concern, both you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Trow mentioned the notion of a precedent. Let me just put one thing in perspective here. The State Parks and Recreation Department has a recreational easement along the entire beach for the coast of Oregon. The distinction here is that to get a sense of just how much we're involved there, while we have that recreational easement from north to south, we have less than 25%, it's closer to maybe 20% of the public access points along that. So a concern we have about a project like this is that most of the public access points along the beach are actually local government, the city, county, whatever, in some cases the private property, federal, and so on. And so we're concerned about stepping into kind of one agreement in relationship to what that would mean up and down the coast, the same as we are with any kind of land use issue along the coast. And that's the basic issue. I don't know what else to add except for we oppose this particular proposal, but that's not to say that it can't be taken in a broader context and looked at, or even conceivably, be part of the local grant program that's part of our budget and have the locals apply as a local park district or a city or county park, that type of thing. So I don't know that all options have been exhausted. If we have concern that if we do this one thing, then what is that going to open up that we haven't foreseen somewhere else if it's not done as within an existing program such as the one that's just been created in our budget, the local grant program that has $5 million allocated towards
it. In the local grant program, Mr. Lockwood, if you determine that this met the criteria, this could basically be a portion of the ballot measure 66 monies, which was to be used for parks and recreation, could it not?
That's right. Yeah, from as far as we've gone this far, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly right.
I think probably the correct form for this at this particular point probably is a budget note and to the overall issue of capital construction, and I guess we can direct a budget note in capital construction because there are capital construction issues
that are related to parks and recreation that should be reporting to the emergency room. And perhaps in the format of a budget note for parks and recreation, develop a plan and report to the board on the ongoing maintenance and management issues relative to this particular issue. And something could be worked out from the direct staff if it's the desire of the subcommittee to go ahead and look at the issues of asking them to develop a request for local grant portions of funds. That Representative Krupp is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken, if you'd come back to the table, please. With the program that Jim has just described that's relatively new, do you think that you could qualify for that program in terms of a grant to achieve the end result that you're looking for here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I don't know enough about that program to know whether we would qualify for that or not. I guess if Mr. Lockwood has a sense for, and maybe this is a discussion that we don't necessarily need to take up the committee's time with right now, I think that's an avenue that's possible for us. But I just can't say offhand whether or not I think we would qualify. And one other thing I guess I would like to add in response to some of Mr. Lockwood's comments, yes, there is that overlay that State Parks has, and we are very sensitive to the public policy issue that's at stake here. Our feeling is that overlay effectively restricts and limits what the port can do at Sport Haven Beach to recover costs that it is incurring there at the facility, and that there should be some financial relationship between parks and the port to help continue to promote public access, even if it's not, quote-unquote, a state park at that site. But I think there are options here. I certainly don't dispute that.
I think in that, thank you very much, Ken. In that regard, we probably ought to go ahead and take a look at coming back with a budget note, again, relative to the Parks and Recreation, to develop a plan to report to E-Board. If we do want to include this Sport Haven Beach, Curry County, we could certainly put a placeholder $1 into the fund to hold it in place as an item, just a way of a possibility, and then revamp Section 7, actually replace it with a budget note. And be fairly specific relative to the public access point and the qualifications for local grant money application and qualification recommendations of the parks and recreation after the plan is developed and is actually brought before the E-Board for the ongoing maintenance and management. I think that would probably be the correct form. I would first of all defer to Legislative Fiscal, Sue Jordan.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm not sure that it's appropriate at all to include this limitation in this bill. This is a facilities or capital construction for maintenance and operations. And I would like to take some time to meet with and confer with Legislative Council on that, on the $1 limitation issue. I think we can put a budget note in that directs the department to look at and report back to the emergency board on the feasibility and possible funding of this type of project.
Okay. I further comments, Representative Shirley.
Maybe I should clarify, Mr. Chair, how we got here to discuss this issue with Senator Hannon when he was dealing with the parks budget in the Transportation Department. And he suggested that we come to this committee and put it in this subcommittee.
Let's see. Mr. McGee from the Department of Administrative Services, maybe we could just have your intake on, or input and your take on the
issue relative to the Crawford-2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill McGee, Department of Administrative Services. I haven't seen the actual language of the amendment. We would, I think, not be supportive of additional allocation of general fund or other allocation of Department of Parks and Recreation's resources at this point, not in the governor's budget. I would think that the option of looking at the grant program would be appropriate. A budget note would facilitate that occurring. And I guess my last comment would be to agree with Ms. Jordan that management and maintenance are operations costs, which I believe are not permissible to be included in the capital budget. I think you'd have trouble with this sort of council by doing that. So I guess I would think a budget note would be the most appropriate way to deal with this.
That's an excellent point. This is specifically for ongoing maintenance and management. And we are in the amendment itself about construction, alteration, repair, and equipping it. But really the budget note would refer basically to management and maintenance itself. So probably as a placeholder, it probably wouldn't have anything there, but we'll just ask if it's a concurrence with the committee, we can just go ahead and have legislative fiscal assistance with the budget note, and you can take a look at the draft of that tomorrow. We'll plan to do that thing. We still have other sections of 55, Senate Bill 5527. I need to ask, is there anyone here that's from over 100 miles or can create an undue hardship to return tomorrow? Not seeing any hands waving wildly in the air. We'll adjourn this subcommittee meeting of the General Government Awakening Subcommittee until tomorrow at 3 o'clock or such time as we're available to open back up.